Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We begin today with a discussion of universal design. One definition of universal design is that any building, product, or service should be designed to meet the needs of everyone, certainly including the disabled community. A so-called Universal Design Summit is being held here today and tomorrow, in which specialists will discuss design needs in the home, office, and public spaces. Joining me in studio are Colleen Starkloff, the founder and co-director of the Starkloff Disability Institute. The institute coordinated the summit. With her are summit keynote speakers Judith Heumann, senior fellow with the Ford Foundation and former special advisor on disability rights to President Obama. Marcy Roth is president of Inclusive Emergency Management Strategies and CEO of the National Partnership for Inclusive Disaster Strategies. Ladies, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Good to see you again, Don.
I know you're interrupting your presence at your own summit to be with us, so we appreciate it all the more because of that. Colleen, let me start with you. I attempted a definition of universal design in the introduction. How would you define it?
I think you really hit it. Universal design really presents a great opportunity to do very, very nice design that is also easily adaptable if your needs change. But you think about designing for people across a lifespan. Typically, when you design houses with steps and narrow staircases and narrow doors in it, that doesn't meet the needs of people across their lifespan. And lots of people buy a home and want to stay in it for a long time, or they might switch and look for a home that they can age in place. And if that home isn't designed to meet their needs and they fall and break a leg, break a hip, have a stroke, some of those kinds of things, they're off to a nursing home because that house is not going to meet their needs.
Well, it's too late for most houses, certainly the ones that are built as of now.
But you look at all the condos, you know, that are going up, all the buildings, now that the bust is over and the boom is on, it's such a great opportunity to be designing for the future. And the homes and condos and apartments that are being built now will be here long past all of us sitting in this studio. And so it's a great design opportunity to create a more inclusive community for everybody, from children to seniors. And with 77 million baby boomers a-coming, mm-hmm. of which I am now one, we all really have a vested interest in caring about universal design.
But I also think...
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think we should look at the fact that existing stock may not be able to be made completely accessible, but actually if you look at Colleen's house, so Colleen's late husband, Max, was a quadriplegic, used a motorized wheelchair. They bought a house, which looking at it, you would think, how could they possibly use that house because he was unable to walk up and down stairs. But they renovated the back. They have a very nice ramp. It looks very beautiful. They were able to put an elevator in. But even if they hadn't been able to put an elevator in, they made the downstairs accessible. So there was a room that people could sleep in. There was an accessible bathroom, a kitchen, dining area, and a sitting area. So I think, yes, building from the beginning, making it accessible, mm-hmm. is ideally what we want. But in cities like St. Louis, where there's a lot of existing stock, there are ways of making things not 100% accessible, but very usable so people can, in fact, not only stay in their home. But I think another really important issue that we need to talk more about is the ability for friends and neighbors to come visit you. And I think, you know, we focus a lot on the people living in the mm-hmm. in the house, which I understand. But I think it's equally important, whether you're young or old, whether you're young and have a child with a baby carriage and you want to be able to bring the child with the baby carriage into somebody's home. That's, I think, a lot of what we're discussing today and tomorrow, the usability, inclusion, universality of housing.
Judy, let me ask you, you're in a motorized wheelchair
yes.
right now and have been for a good many years, as I understand it.
68.
How difficult or easy is it for you to get around day to day in most places?
So it's a really good question. And I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and at that point it was very difficult. Mm-hmm. So now things like streets, curb cuts exist, the ability to go into stores, to movie theaters, to theaters, that's much easier. Buses are accessible. Light rail and trains, particularly new ones, are accessible. Older ones are being modified. But one of the big barriers that still exists is housing. So I have some friends who have made their homes accessible so that, in fact, my husband is also a wheelchair user, can come visit them. But most of my friends do not have accessible places. I think the other issue is people don't necessarily understand what we're talking about. So I go to a synagogue in Washington, D.C., and one of the congregants said to me one day, we just sold our house. We moved into a new apartment, into an apartment building. It's not new. And they didn't have an electric door to get into the apartment. And I said, are there steps? And she said, yeah, only five. So this woman had moved into a place thinking that it was accessible, concerned about not having an electric door. But the bottom line is, you didn't really need the electric door because of the steps.
That's Mount Everest for someone, isn't it? Exactly.
People sometimes with mobility disabilities, it's the same thing.
So, to further illustrate Judy's point, you know, after Max died in 2010, people said to me, oh, Colleen, are you going to sell the house? And are you going to sell the van? And I have a big van with a lift on it. And I wanted to say to them, have you not paid attention to what my whole career is about? Mm-hmm. I don't have to think twice about Judy coming to St. Louis. She's my friend. She's my sister. I can pick her up at the airport in my van with a lift on it. She can come into my house. I don't have to think twice about it. She can take the elevator to the second or the third floor in my house and sleep in whatever room she wants. It's very important. It's critical. And we need to be thinking about this. And we can do something about it. We can do beautiful, universal design that people will love.
And in fact, there's a real opportunity when there's a great opportunity when, in fact, communities are planning for emergencies and disasters. And then when, unfortunately, it happens and they have to recover, these are great opportunities to build in universal design and universal accessibility.
This is where you come in, obviously.
That's right.
and your area of expertise. I wanted to ask about that because that definitely is something that most people don't associate with design or with the inclusivity that we want to talk about.
It's why I'm very fortunate to have been invited to this conference and to be able to talk about the imperative for universal design, not just for people with disabilities, but for somebody who was recently injured, for people who are getting older and may need assistance in evacuating, making sure that information is accessible so that people have the actionable information that they need in order to take their personal protection when necessary.
I guess in a strange way, we can look at an emergency situation or a disaster also as an opportunity.
Funny that you say that. One of the quotes that I shared this morning was from John Kennedy, and he took the two symbols, one for crisis and one for opportunity in Chinese, and pointed out that these two symbols are inextricably associated. You can't have a crisis without also having an opportunity. And so, yes, exactly right. Crisis is opportunity.
Judy Heumann, one of the issues that has come up is that we're not only talking about disabled people with regard to this. We're talking about people who are older and children and others who, for whatever reason, Colleen recently had a broken leg and had a little trouble getting around. I mean, that happens to a lot of people. So that has to be kept in mind as well.
I think it's very important that people not look at what we're discussing as something which impacts a certain group. It benefits someone like myself, like immediately, but people shouldn't be afraid. People want to become older. People's goal in life is not to die at the age of 50. Mm-hmm. And whereas, you know, there are many changes that are going on, people are living a lot longer, and subsequently, they want to be able to live in their communities. And if they choose to move out of their communities, it shouldn't be for lack of accessibility in their communities.
Colleen, how do we do here in St. Louis?
Actually, you know, there was an interesting accolade. Joe Holloman just noted that St. Louis is one of the top cities for accessibility in the country. I felt really proud of that because we've been working on making places and public spaces accessible since the 70s, since the whole what we call the bus issue. Mm-hmm. When we were fighting for lifts on buses and curb cuts and access to the public infrastructure. We do well. Are we perfect? No. I was in Rome a couple of years ago. We're way better than Rome. Judy's traveled all over the world. Mm-hmm. Judy's a good person to talk about how accessibility is around the world. We're getting there, and hopefully more people who hear this, who come to our conference, who learn about the design opportunities that exist, will get on the bandwagon. And, you know, we are the only group of people for whom our civil rights are dependent on actual changes to the built environment. Mm-hmm. Nobody else has that. So it's really critical, particularly since people age into disability. Mm-hmm. And they don't admit it, but they do.
Yeah. What is... you know, I think back, didn't we have a recent anniversary, 20th or 25th?
We had the 25th a couple of years ago.
So where 2015. Are we? Marcia, let me turn to you. Where are we with all of that? It seems like we've been talking about this for a long time. The needs are still great.
The needs are still great. And we see universal design as an opportunity to move beyond simply compliance with the law. Moving to a place where the whole community participates and the whole community benefits. For people with disabilities, we've moved away from thinking about our needs as being special or us being vulnerable, and rather moving towards how we can be full participants before, during, and after acquiring disabilities. So how are we doing? We're now 27 years past the ADA. We have a long way to go. And universal design is a fundamental element of how we start to accelerate that progress.
If I could, I think we're actually looking at the issue of accessibility since 1973.
Absolutely.
With something called Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, which said any recipient of federal financial assistance couldn't discriminate. So that's an important point because we've been working on this a long time. I think one of the issues is we're looking at people no longer thinking about issues of accessibility as something special. And I'd like to just give a couple examples. I'm a woman. I go into the bathrooms. There are a few wider wheelchair stalls. If there are six stalls in a women's bathroom and five of them are empty and a non-disabled person comes in, 9 out of 10 times, do they go to the smaller bathroom or the larger bathroom? They go to the larger bathroom. Most people in the community had nothing to do with getting these bathrooms larger. We had to fight really hard to get them. But now people fight to get to them. Mm-hmm. They're going there to change their clothes, to put their luggage in. Likewise, if you look at baby carriages and you look at elevators to get to public transportation, when you go and look at the elevator, do you see a line of people in wheelchairs? Sometimes. Usually you'll see a line of people with baby carriages. So some of the things that we fought for now are built in. People don't even know that they didn't exist before. And that's ultimately what we're wanting to do, where people don't see this as special. They don't think about it in ways of only benefiting a narrow population, but they see it as something which benefits the community.
Mm. And you know, Judy talks about Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, and that's a huge opportunity because a tremendous amount of federal funding gets spent after disasters. Every one of those dollars is expected to comply with physical accessibility, program accessibility, effective communication accessibility. And so while many times people will say to us, well, there's no money for universal design, there's no money for making things more accessible. In fact, the opportunity that comes with the crisis is that federal dollars are going to be spent. They need to be spent in compliance with the Rehabilitation Act requirements, and this is a golden opportunity for the whole community.
I have to take a break now, but I want to pick up on that point when we come back, and we'll do so momentarily. We're talking about universal design in connection with the Universal Design Summit, which is taking place here in St. Louis today and tomorrow. My guests in studio are Colleen Starkloff, Judith Heumann, and Marcy Roth. We'll come back and continue that conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you prefer to send a tweet, do so at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Colleen Starkloff, Judith Heumann, and Marcy Roth. Marcy, I'll come back to you because you brought up the magic word funding. And in today's environment, locally and nationally, funding is really kind of hard to come by. I wonder if you can address that in terms of what you would anticipate, particularly from the current administration.
Well, it's a great question. There's a great opportunity after a disaster. Billions of dollars get spent. In fact, the federal government, FEMA, invested over $10 billion in emergency preparedness, disaster response, and recovery across the country last year. So every one of those $10 billion must comply with the obligations under the Rehab Act. Universal design, as I said earlier, is just a perfect partner achieving that. So the funds are there. The obligation is there. The reason that this conference is so important is because it's bringing folks together to talk about the imperatives and the opportunities and driving the use of those funds in ways that will, in fact, achieve whole community inclusion.
Colleen, do you want to weigh in on that part of it?
I think the reason that we do this conference is try to educate people, because universal design is not a code. It's not required. It's a design opportunity that we're promoting. Whenever the government, whether it's the state or the federal government, sets a code, they're going to set the lowest bar possible, and they're going to make whatever requirement it is to be all that you have to do, but not all that you can do. And Ron Mace, who was the creator of universal design, said, we can do better than this. And he had polio, like Judy. He used a wheelchair. He was an architect, and he said, we can create design criteria like blocking behind walls in bathrooms so that you can, blocking would be a sheet of plywood. Behind drywall, you don't see it. But if you need a grab bar, you can put it in. Mm-hmm. If you don't need it, you can take it out. More space in the bathroom so you could get up next to your toilet in a wheelchair if you needed to. It doesn't have to look, it just looks like a great, wonderful, spacious bathroom. Like she said, everybody goes in those big bathrooms because we love that stuff. You can pull under sinks and cabinets for workspace if you design them so that they will seamlessly change so that you can pull under them without having to hire a carpenter to come in and change the space. But when you don't need it, you close the cabinet doors and nobody's the wiser. It's good-looking design. And this conference is really focused on teaching designers and builders and architects who are there how to do this and also make it very attractive and beautiful.
We have a caller here, I think, that wants to address the issue of dollars and cents. Let's bring in Perry. He's calling from the Central West End. Go ahead, Perry.
Oh, hi, Colleen. I'd like to know if you said the federal dollars have to go through the requirement for people with various disabilities. I wonder if the TIF local money undergoes the same kind of scrutiny when they convert the condominium complexes and apartments, like there's many in the St. Louis area, if they have the same scrutiny.
Let's find out. Marcy, you're nodding your head. Is you have the answer to that question?
Well, I can speak just to the use of those federal dollars.
Federal.
And when federal dollars are being spent, whether they're being spent by the federal government or whether they're subcontracting those, subgranting those, the requirements remain the same.
Yep. And yes, if the development is going to be more than four units,
right,
then federal, and I presume Missouri and St. Louis, may have codes that are a little stronger than the federal. I don't know, but the bottom line is they will have to comply to ensure that the units that are being built will have a certain number of units that are accessible, and also that doorways are a certain width, and that it'll be possible to put bars into a bathroom. Certain kinds of major structural things will have to be addressed. But I really want to make one point, and that is, It is really important, and I appreciate the speaker bringing this up, for the community to be knowledgeable and concerned about new construction and major innovation, and that there is a source of people who understand what is required. My thought is, you know, you don't want to have to be thinking about something being done wrong all the time and what to do if it's done wrong. You want things to be done right. In order to ensure that things are done right, people in positions of authority need to know that their constituents care about things being done right. And today we're calling it universal design.
I want to bring in another caller here. Tony will join us from Wildwood. Tony, thank you for being with us. Go ahead.
Good day. Two of my favorite things for universal for design for everyone. Number one would be drains in the floors of rooms that have drains. Architects do not clean floors. And the second thing would be adaptability. The house I'm in, I got an offer I couldn't refuse because the bathroom wall could not be moved 1 foot. And changeability would be a priority, along with drains and floors.
Trench drains. Trench drains on floors that are properly sloped in the shower avoid having a lip, so you don't have, if you use a shower chair, you can wheel right in. But typically, those are a little bit bigger, and people just love them.
You know,
and you don't get water all over the floor.
And these are things, unless you're confronted with the issue and with the problem, you're not going to think about it.
Right.
You're just not going to think
about
it.
But if you go into a house that has one of these beautiful showers, mm-hmm. we call them curbless showers, mm-hmm. and you take a look at that, it'll practically sell the house for you. They can be done so beautifully, and people don't know that it works for everybody.
You know, we just did that.
Did
As a
you?
Matter of fact,
did
that
you?
Was a huge selling point. Yes, it was.
Good for you.
Time is beginning to get away, but I want to come back to Judy Heumann, because you mentioned during one of the breaks that we should be talking about technology and innovation in this world today. What's going on?
Well, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, there was no thing called Siri. Or voice-activated software.
Yeah.
And voice-activated software has come into play because the federal government many years ago started investing in it for the military, for education for disabled children. I think we need to see that when we invest, new designs come up. And now something like voice-activated software is just, we expect it. No one is going to go out and buy products today that don't have that. So I think we need to be looking at appropriate ways of investing in items for the future. And again, looking at the issue of universality, something like voice-activated software is amazing, and it helps everyone.
How has it made your life better and easier?
Well, voice-activated software for me, because I have limited use of my fingers, so the more accurate the voice-activated software is, the easier it is for me to be able to get information. Or like at home on my desktop, I use something called Naturally Speaking, where I'm able to dictate emails and various other pieces of things I have to get on paper. But doctors and dentists and nurses and average people, you know, now we don't use paper as much. And so we're putting it in our computers, and we're doing it verbally in many ways.
And this kind of software comes on iPhones, for example, and on Androids. For blind people, it's incredible what it does. It just talks to them. Everything that comes across their emails, their texts, everything, it just talks to them.
And every day, there's something new.
Absolutely.
What do you, Colleen, expect and hope to come from this conference? And is it open to the public?
It's open to the public. People could still come. We have, for consumers who are not professionals, who just like to get some ideas for their homes, we have information about lighting. We have information about disaster. We have information about dorms. We have information about aging in place. There's just a ton of stuff. Parks, affordable housing, and museums. You know, the new City Arch River Museum.
Yeah.
We've been working with the designers and construction team for the last 6 years on that. When that thing opens in July of, it's supposed to open Independence Day 2018. When it opens, it will be totally universally designed. And we had a lot of discussions with them about, why are you putting those steps there? You could just make it universal and everybody can come in this sloped area. And that's why the new front entrance to that museum after you cross Luther Eli Smith mm-hmm. Park, it's all one big slant right down to a gorgeous fountain and right into the museum. Beautiful. and trench drains for the colored golden to keep the water out of the museum.
Marcy, do you have a final thought before we say goodbye?
We've talked a lot about housing, and I want to point out that development of schools, community centers, hospitals, transportation systems, any of our infrastructure initiatives, all benefit from universal design. And before, during, and after disasters, there are real opportunities in making sure that those designs take into consideration their use in a disaster.
I think you've all opened a lot of eyes today with this discussion. A lot of things going on and should be going on that people don't think enough about. Thank you so much.
Thank
Colleen
you for
Stavros.
Having
Thank you for
Wonderful
having us.
To see Marcy Roth. Great to see you. Judy Heumann, you've been back. You were with us once before a few years ago. Great to see you back in St.
Thank
Louis.
You.
Thanks for being with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.